Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Is your old air conditioner running all the time but not cooling your home? Stop wasting energy and money. Call Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, Electric today for a complete AC cleaning and tune-up. And we'll include, absolutely free, a one-year, no-breakdown guarantee, all for just $89.95. That's right, we guarantee your AC will cool your home for an entire year or your money back. Call 866-4-SEASONS.
For all the right reasons, call 866-4-SEASONS.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Warriors trying to hurry up the Rockets here. Shot clock at 13. Şengün spins right sideline. Lob inside and a dunk for Thompson. No weak side help in time.
Yeah, completely asleep on that one.
And I think Steve Kerr will call a timeout and wave the white flag.
Dub Nation, it's Steve Kerr. You're listening to Willard and Dibbs on 95.7 The Game.
Thanks, Coach. I will say this. I appreciate you and our audience and our surroundings for being able to, even though we disagree a lot, appreciate the nuance of the Jonathan Kuminga situation. Because there are a ton of national NBA writers who I believe are grabbing clips of Jonathan driving to the hoop last night and going, see, that's why he doesn't play. Don't be a jerk. Don't do that. Don't have this kid go through what has probably been the most difficult professional 3 weeks of his life and get totally put on the shelf. And then when he comes in, I'm not saying he met the moment last night at all, but if he's going to come in and take one bad drive to the hoop and then grab the clip and put it all over social media and go, see, now do you understand why he doesn't play? That's kind of weak. And by the way, that's not why he doesn't play. That's not why he doesn't play. Have you ever heard Steve Kerr come on this show and we're asking him about Jonathan Kuminga, and Steve goes, well, he doesn't play because when he drives the hoop, he sucks.
Right.
No. Jonathan's skill set doesn't pair perfectly with what the Warriors have found as far as a rotation and a lineup that really does work. That's all that's going on here. And so there's just a lot of cherry picking going on, which I get. I get it. It's the playoffs. It's social media. I understand. But don't do that.
No, and you are allowed to do that, but sure. I do think that it's kind of a weak sauce take. And the guy had a 12-day break where he didn't play any basketball other than scrimmaging. And I know he had some great comments yesterday after the game talking about how he stays sharp and stays focused and the rest of it. So his first action after Jimmy gets hurt, they run a screen roll, and he dives to the hoop, and he gets the ball back from Steph, and he goes up with a left hand, and it's a layup, and it's contested. And, well, he barely even got it above the rim. He didn't even get it above the rim, and it was a miss. And it's like, oh, boy, oh, Kuminga. Well, it had been 12 days since he actually played an NBA game, so you got to give the guy, I will anyway, the grace to sure. Kind of warm in to the game. And he knocked down a couple of threes. He was 4 of 12, and he was all right. If you want to rank, like, all the Warriors
yeah,
who played,
he was fine.
He was not the best, and he was not the worst.
No, nobody,
he was fine.
Nobody did great. Nobody did great.
Right. For the most part, right.
You know what I mean? I'll take Quentin Post's shooting, but Quentin Post also, he gets so cooked on things on the other end of the floor so often. He just gets lured into things. Like, I would love for Quentin. Quentin needs to get a crash course on how to not have a veteran draw a foul on you. It's just every time. And he always has that look on his face like, God damn it. I got, you know, I got God again. Yes, you did. And I get it. Like, he's a rookie. So, you know, it's going to happen. But, yeah, for me, you can have the opinion. Just don't cherry pick it in that sort of a way. Now, the flip side of it, because I've also heard this today. Some of you Kuminga people, and I'm sorry to call you that, some of you Kuminga people have just, like, you're the most stubborn human beings I've ever met in my life. I don't know. Like, some of you came out of yesterday and you're like, see, they're going to need him. They're going to need him no matter if Jimmy plays or not. Where are you getting this thought? Why? What? What is it that you're not understanding? This has been explained to you by the team ad nauseum for 3 weeks. Nothing happened last night that changed it. Nothing. So if you, like, just, again, you're allowed to have your opinion, but good Lord, you're stubborn. Nothing happened last night that says now the Warriors absolutely, they're going to need Kuminga's athleticism in this series. What did you see? What athleticism did he show that changed the basketball game last night?
He got to the basket a handful of times, and he made about half of them. Half the layups that he attempted, and he actually made.
And then the other ones went over the backboard.
Well, the one did. Yeah, the one did. Yeah. And the one I was referencing, his first shot, which didn't even get above the cylinder. And if you think about all the things that he does well, and if one of them, you'll grant me, just for the conversation, is going to the basket and finishing, Jimmy Butler does that better.
Yep.
So what else does Jonathan do really well that isn't duplicated by either Jimmy Butler or someone else? And the answer is, not a thing. There are better passers. There's better three-point shooters. There's better defenders. There's better ISO players, and there's better finishers. So all the things that he does well, if Jimmy is healthy and playing, Jimmy does about 90% of those things, and that's why he's not been in the rotation. Now, if Jimmy Butler is hobbled or compromised or not available at all, well, then, yeah, you're going to need Jonathan, and you're going to need him to play better than he played. He played okay. But if you're going to beat Houston in Game 3 without Jimmy Butler, and Kuminga's going to play 26 minutes, you're going to need him to be better than he was last night.
Yeah, absolutely. And then there's this. Thank you for texting in and listening. We appreciate it. The Boxer and Gerson Work Injury Attorneys text line 925. Steph Curry literally said that Kuminga will be needed whether Jimmy plays or not. So there's that. I mean, this is why I came at Steiny and Goo. What, like, do you guys not get what professionals say to a microphone? They're not going to rip their teammate. He's their teammate. Just because Steph said, yeah, no, I don't have any problem with the physicality in this series, doesn't mean that Steph doesn't have a problem with the physicality in the series. Steph is not going to come out and be like, well, we do need Jonathan if Jimmy can't play, but if Jimmy plays, we don't. They're like, that's not how you handle the media. These guys are seasoned pros. They're going to say whatever keeps them in their best position to succeed. Their best position to succeed is A, don't sound like you're whining and complaining. Don't let the Rockets see you sweat like that. And their best position is to keep Jonathan in as best of a positive frame of mind as they can through this situation, which is not easy.
And that's what Steve Kerr has said all along about Jonathan Kuminga. And Kuminga even said that himself in the post game. Like, he was asked about, how do you stay ready and what do you do to stay ready? And it's like, well, I go out there and I work and I scrimmage when I can and I play. And of course I stay ready, because you never know in this league. And Steve Kerr said it to us earlier in the week about Jonathan and staying ready. And they've imparted that message. And unfortunately, when Jimmy Butler gets hurt like that, now you need Jonathan Kuminga. And if you hadn't been preparing him and making sure that he was ready and staying ready and all the rest of it, well, then you've got no hope. But Kuminga clearly had been staying ready, and so when he got on the floor last night in the first quarter, he went out there and he was ready to go.
Let's take a quick call on this. I also want to let you know that there is maybe something interesting from Jimmy Butler's agent that we want to tell you about. We'll have that for you coming up next, but let's go to Art in Roseville. Hi, Art. Thanks for calling.
Hey, how you doing? I was thinking about Kuminga and such a gifted athlete, you know, four seasons in, and he just displays a lack of situational awareness. You know, I mean, even though he's got this God's gifts of physical talent, you have other guys roll up in front of him, like GB2 or that kid Spencer last night, or Pods, or even like Ty Jerome for Cleveland. They always seem to be in the right place at the right time. They don't have to be directed. And I just feel that, as sad to say, I feel like Kuminga doesn't have that. And I think that's what's killing him. So that's all I have to say. Thank you. Guys have a good day.
Art, thank you. Yeah, I look, that's part of it. He's still a 22-year-old player, still a little bit short on minutes considering he's a lottery pick. And but also someone who has not picked up what some of the coaches have wanted him to do as quickly as they would like. I think both of those statements are fair.
It's not easy to do when you didn't have high school basketball and your only year after that was G League Ignite, which is kind of like an AAU plus experience where everyone's out there trying to get theirs and trying to make sure they get drafted. And if you do look at his draft class, I think he's 14th on the list in total minutes played. So he hasn't had the touches and the time that, by the way, number one on that list, Jalen Green.
Yeah. Wow.
He's number one in the draft class in minutes played.
Number one.
Yep.
There it is. All right, we're live in the Laughing Monk Studios. Laughing Monk, righteously brewed in San Francisco. We're sponsored by Honda of Vallejo, and we'll continue to take your calls, not just coming up next, but all afternoon long. What are you still thinking about today after last night's watch? 888-957-9570. That is the number. But also coming up next, a little something, maybe a little light at the end of the tunnel from Jimmy Butler's agent. That is coming up next on Willard and Dibbs.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today.
And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Curry calls it over Buddy Hield. Bad pass, Curry. Another turnover. Sloppy play. On the break, Jalen Green layup. Timeout. And that could be ball game right there. So they had Dad to 91-80. But turnovers, a technical foul, sloppy play. Dub Nation, it's the voice of the Warriors, Tim Roy. You're listening to Willard and Dibbs on 95.7 The Game.
We got two pieces of sound we really want to share with you. Okay?
All right.
One of them is Jimmy Butler related, and the other one is Stephen Curry related.
Okay.
All right? You ever heard of them guys?
Yep, both of them.
Okay. Okay. Strength in numbers. That's an old phrase. Warriors don't have it this year. 888-957-957. We'll go to the phones in just a sec. Mark Spears, long time, very well-respected NBA reporter, ESPN. So NBA on ESPN, they're talking about Jimmy Butler, the injury, and the unknown. We're still awaiting MRI results. I don't think the MRI is probably going to tell us anything other than, yeah, like pain tolerance, let's see, wait and see, we'll figure it out Saturday. That's my expectation. I don't know that, but we'll see. But in the process of talking on NBA on ESPN, listen to what Mark Spears said earlier today.
Let me tell you this real quick. There is some hope, though. Bernie Lee, Jimmy Butler's agent, texts me saying, pray for the bear. That tells me that's some optimism for Jimmy.
Okay, so only one person laughed because I don't think everybody understands fully pray for the bear. Pray for the bear is an old statement. It's been used by Muhammad Ali. It's been used by Kobe Bryant. And basically the idea is, you ever see me in a fight with a bear, pray for the bear.
Mm.
So the idea is Jimmy Butler's agent is saying, oh, you guys saying the Rockets now have the edge because Jimmy's hurt? Pray for the Rockets, which Mark is taking as Jimmy is going to still put his stamp on this series. And that's probable. I don't know about game three. I would be surprised if he missed any more than that. And I wouldn't be surprised if he didn't miss that.
Yeah, I would be surprised if he played in game three, okay, just based on the severity of the fall and the fact that he went in the locker room and he did not return. And he ended up staying overnight to get an MRI in Houston. And so isn't that the way
there was the report that they sent him back early. The Warriors were going to stay overnight, but that Jimmy,
oh, then I had it backwards.
Jimmy hopped
okay
an immediate
that's
flight
what
back
Kawakami
here.
Reported.
Yeah, right. Jimmy yeah hopped an immediate flight back here to take the MRI.
Okay.
But anyway,
it's neither here nor
they're
there.
They're all here now. They're all back
right
home
and
now.
And the fact yeah that he had the fall and then was unable to return in a playoff game tells me that it was really bad to where he couldn't play through it. And yep, so, you know, an injury like that, the next day it can't feel better. It probably feels worse. Oh, yeah. And so the treatment of a pelvic contusion like that, there's only so much you could do. It comes down to pain tolerance, and maybe he needs a couple extra days. I don't know. I would be surprised if he did play Saturday, 2 days from now in game three, but I'd also be shocked if he didn't then play Monday in game four.
The extra day off really helps. The extra day off really helps. I did see one somewhat speculative report if the game had been tonight, I'm sorry, not tonight, obviously not tonight. If the game was tomorrow, Jimmy would be listed as iffy. But the fact that it's Saturday gives them obviously even more hope. So I don't know if that makes him questionable, probable, doubtful, anywhere in between. I'm not a doctor and I'm not tapped in behind the scenes right now with the Warriors on this. But the whispers that we're hearing sound like Jimmy Butler has avoided something major. And so, yes, you're right. Game three, who knows? But the Warriors could very well still win this series, even if he misses game three. And I give them, especially in that particular game, I still give them a good puncher's chance even without him. I don't give them much of a puncher's chance in the series if he's to miss extended time. But the home crowd energy of a game three situation, I think the Warriors would have a shot. They'd have a shot to win on Saturday night without him.
Without a doubt. And you look at role players playing at home, and it's an old adage, but I do think that it's true that role players play better yep at home. And when you mentioned what you did earlier about it not being strength in numbers, and it's really, you know, three star players and then a bunch of, quite frankly, role players,
yep,
and all these role players are going to be coming home where they've played, you know, 42 games now, 41 plus a play-in, and so they're more comfortable here. You would expect Pods to play better as long as the food poisoning or whatever he had is gone. Quentin Post already did play better, so maybe he'll be more comfortable
no
as
doubt
well. And so no matter who's going to be on the floor for Golden State, I do think that their younger players are bound to play better at home.
Yeah, Quentin felt like, they, again, he just needed that first three to go in, and I think he missed his first two, and then he hit one, and then he got going. And then it was like, then he was downhill. I think he was maybe 4 or 5, 4 or 6 from that point forward. And what I dig about Quentin, look, I know the analytics are there. These teams know each other inside and out. But do you notice with Quentin Post, who is a good three-point shooter, when he gets the ball out there, the Rockets just let him, go ahead, dude, shoot it. And he's like, okay, swish, swish, swish. So they're letting him have that shot. And if they do that at Chase Center on Saturday night, that man's going to hit a few. No doubt in my mind. All right, let's get back out to the phones. We want to do it all afternoon long. It's that kind of day. What is still in your head based on last night as we now get to about 3:30 the following day? I got a Steph Curry thing for you. We'll do it in a little bit. 888-957-9570. Let's go to Jeff in Albany. Hi, Jeff. Thanks for calling.
Hey, guys. Love your show. Love 95.7 The Game. I just want to say this, man. I'm a Laker fan, diehard. But my thing is, listening to Warrior fans call in when you guys, when the Warriors lose, they have a tendency to always try to find an escape goat. And the escape goat is always Jonathan Kuminga. That's just the way Steve Kerr coaches. But I'm going to say this. You put him with another team and let him roam free and do his thing, he will tear the Warriors a new you-know-what if he was to play against them. All I'm saying is stop blaming that youngster. Wait, it's now, not his fault when the Warriors lose.
Are you hearing people blame Jonathan today, Jeff?
Man, I just heard somebody say something about Jonathan not too long ago. It's just every show, it just seemed like it's always Jonathan's fault. That young man can play ball, man. He can ball.
Yeah,
he
Jeff.
Can ball.
I actually think what you're saying, there are aspects of it, Jeff. Thanks so much for the call. My opinion, where people in the Warriors organization might agree with you. Like they and I don't mean the whole like he's going to go to another team and rip you a new one and take sure. over the league. No, not that's not going to happen. But I bet you'd find people in the organization if you said that guy go to another team and he'll really play well. They'd be like, "Yeah, probably." Again, I don't think the Warriors have anything against Jonathan. They found something that works. It doesn't really fit Jonathan that well. End of story.
Yeah, right now.
Now. So, like, I don't think they think he stinks. No one's got anything against him. And to your point, Jeff, if anybody's blaming Jonathan for yesterday, that's come on.
I mean, what are we doing?
No. Jonathan had nothing to do with why the Warriors lost last night at all.
I think that last night for me is more about credit than it is about blame anyway, and I give credit to Houston. And we can put aside the Amen Thompson foul on Jimmy Butler that caused him to miss the game, dirty or not, that doesn't matter. That happened, and they called a foul on Amen Thompson. Jimmy Butler shot free throws, and then he couldn't play anymore, and Pods was sick, and I'm not going to sit there and point the finger at excuses and say that's why they lost. I look at Houston, and bottom line for me, Houston played better. They were more physical.
Sure.
They were more aggressive. Steph Curry had, what, 5-6 turnovers? Steph and Draymond had 11 turnovers combined. And if they're your two primary ball handlers and they're going to be that loosey-goosey with the ball, and you know Steph was 6 of 15, he had 20 points, that's below his norm. Houston was flat better. So for me, if you want to do the credit or blame scale, for me it's about 80% credit to Houston and then 20% blame to the Warriors. And if you want to play the blame game, I would look at Steph and Draymond and say that they're the ones that I would blame the most.
Did we not say that the linchpin to every single one of these games individually is turnovers?
Yeah.
We said it all day yesterday. And in game one, the Rockets had I think 16 turnovers and the Warriors only had 11. It was almost exactly flipped last night. The Rockets only had 10. The Warriors had 15. I literally set that over under at about 13.5. That's where I said it yesterday. I think if the Warriors go under 13.5 turnovers, I think they're going to win a lot of these games. If you go over, you're probably going to lose. They went over. They lost.
Right.
Jalen Green was the best player on the floor. No two ways about that. There's no debating that.
Yeah.
Awful last night.
And if you're a Warrior team and you're going to have 6 fewer shots than Houston, well, then you better be making your threes at a very high rate. And they shot it pretty well, 39.5% from three. But from two, Mark, they were 16 of 37 from two, which is really, really subpar. A team like the Warriors is normally about 55% from two. And last night they shot about 38, 40% from two. So when you didn't have the three-pointer available, you had a hard time getting buckets inside the arc.
We have a $20 super chat on YouTube. Woo-hoo!
Major bag alert.
Major. All right. Left Coast Mana would like to say, have a drink on me, boys. In regards to Amen, it is a classic case of foul baiting. The key here is the Rockets are also seeking contact with a Dubs player. DB on GP in game one, that's Dylan Brooks on GP2 in game one, and then Amen on JB in game two. Thank you very much for the chat, for listening, for following along. Do you think that the Rockets are seeking contact on the Warriors' offensive end?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
and
so do I.
I do think that Ime Udoka has signaled that by what he talked about after the last matchup in the regular season. And, you know, the more the Warriors complain, the better Houston is, if I can paraphrase. Like, the more the Warriors complain, then the Rockets feel like they've already, quote, won. So they're going to impose their will physically, and they're going to make the officials call whatever they can call. And, you know, last night they called 35 fouls, which is right about the average for the postseason. The average is 35.7, so it wasn't under-officiated in terms of fouls called, but in terms of fouls committed, you made this point earlier, you're watching the game, it's like, that's a foul, and that's a foul, and that's a foul, on both ends.
Constantly.
But you can't honestly call the game in that fashion, because the refs want flow, and they understand it's an entertainment property, and so there's a certain level of physicality that you just have to allow based on the reality of the league.
No doubt about it. And I'd love to talk more about that in a little bit. We'll get there. Let's go to Eddie in the marina. Hi, Eddie. Thanks for calling.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. Yeah. Love the show, Willard. Been listening to you for years.
Thanks, man.
There was just some points that I wanted to make. One, I'm glad the Warriors didn't get into too much light as far as, you know, all the physicality. They know what they're doing. They know what they're up against. The second thing was, you mentioned earlier in the show about what does Jonathan Kuminga do better than others. What he does is, and what I feel the Warriors are kind of missing, is the downhill fast breaks. He gets out there. We go on momentum swings. We run up the score. Obviously, the other team is going to call timeouts if they have them. If they don't have them, they got to try to just, you know, play it out. But that's something that we've been missing lately is, and I know it's playoff basketball, but we've been missing that running up the score real quick on us, for us. And I think JK does that really well when he gets the opportunity to do it, meaning like catching the ball, getting out there, getting dunks, getting out in front of the defense. And then the other thing I was going to mention was TJD. I feel like he's really good on the high screen and roll to the basket, which we saw glimpses of in Phoenix a couple weeks ago. Obviously, the Houston's a little better than Phoenix, but I'd like to see more of that. Plus, he is physical. He's a big body. He's going to spread the floor when he's out there, setting the screens and rolling, and it creates more shots for the entire team. So I do want to see that hopefully implemented a little bit in Game 3, Game 4.
Eddie, yeah, thank you so much. If Jimmy Butler plays, I do not think you're going to get your wish. So here's the thing. In listening to Eddie, he has some points. There's no doubt about it. And you get to like whichever players you want to like and all of that stuff. But here's what I think is the breakdown. And I'm not going to make this about Jonathan. It can be about any player who you want to play more than he does. We fall into the trap, I think, of looking at the individual. TJD does this, screen and roll. Jonathan gets out in the open floor, and he can run, and he can finish in transition. Right, they can. Those guys can do those things. But when the Warriors are looking at this as a group, they're not looking at it based on what an individual can do. They're looking at it based on what a group can do. What does a group of players go out there and do together? And the people that you keep wanting to jam into the rotation don't do well with a lot of the other groups out there, largely because most of the people you're talking about are not what? Shooters!
Right.
Can't shoot. And when Draymond and Jimmy are both on the floor, they're not three-point shooters. Looney gets mixed in, all of that. You need shooters. And so I get it. You can like those players. You can like certain aspects of their game, but they don't fit with what the Warriors are largely doing. And the idea of Kuminga being the centerpiece of like these runs that the Warriors go on, this series does not look like that kind of series to me. This is not a get out and run and open and score 120 points kind of a game. That's as obvious can be.
Right. It's going to be a slow down, grind it out kind of a series. And when you've got a player like Jimmy Butler, who is an excellent ISO player, then you need to surround him for the most part with shooters. And if you want to look at your team, Quentin Post can shoot. Kavon, no. Buddy Hield, well, yeah, in theory. But beyond that, You get down to Gee, 33% from three. GP2 is at 32.6. Draymond's at 32.5. Kuminga's at 30.5. You've got more non-shooters than you have actual shooters on a team. So if you're going to have five on the floor, and Jimmy Butler's one of them, a guy who does not shoot the three very well, 27.9, by the way, as a Warrior from three, well, you'd better have four shooters out there with him to give you the spacing that you need.
95.7 The Game, breaking news.
The 2024-2025 NBA Defensive Player of the Year is Evan Mobley of the Cleveland Cavaliers. It is not Draymond Green.
Stand on it.
Or sit down. Either one is fine. But there it is, the Defensive Player of the Year, and all of the work, quite frankly, that Draymond and to a degree the Warriors did in somewhat campaigning for this over down the stretch over the last month and a half or so. He was a finalist. He was in the top three. I haven't seen the final vote. He probably came in second.
Dyson Daniels second, according to Mark Grandy in my ear.
Dyson Daniels second. Yep. Okay, so Draymond comes in third.
Yep.
And Evan Mobley is the winner of the 2024-25 NBA DPOY.
I'm not shocked.
I know you're not. You told me a week ago you didn't think he was going to win.
And it's because of the reality of not only the voters, because I mentioned last week that not every voter sees what we see, which is Draymond Green guarding 1 through 5. And you look at, I think, a lot of voters who don't watch every dribble of every game of every team. When you're going to vote on something like this, you look to the top of the standings first. And you look at a team that did really well.
Good point.
And you think, how were they on defense? Cleveland, pretty good on defense. And then you find a player on that team who's a good defender. And you think, okay, that player probably deserves it. Nikola Jokic should win the MVP. He's not going to. It's going to go to Shai Gilgeous-Alexander because Shai Gilgeous-Alexander was on a 68-win team. He had a great year, but if you want to look at like the year versus the year and take the records out of it, I think that you could give it to Jokic.
I get where you're coming from. There is a debate on this. I personally believe the Nuggets are going to be a first-round out. So at a certain point, you when you look at value, you're like, value toward what? You know what I mean? Especially when you're Jokic and you've set a bar that is as high as the championship. He's done it before. So I understand where we're coming from here. That's a true debate. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Nikola Jokic, that'll be days from now. But there it is. Evan Mobley is the Defensive Player of the Year. I think your point is a good one as far as why this comes down the way it does. Because if you do want to stick it into a vacuum and just think about it, and let's be real, we're all watching Draymond on a nightly basis, and we're not watching Evan Mobley. Like, you're not that much of a league pass, Larry. Like, you don't watch all of the Cavaliers games. Maybe some of you do, but most of you don't. I've certainly not seen nearly as many Cavaliers games this year as I've watched Warriors. So I'm able to experience right in front of us the brilliance that Draymond Green often brings to the table. But the other two people who were finalists were also in the play-in tournament. And Cleveland is over here as the one seed.
Yep.
I'm with you. That matters. That if somebody is even kind of even on those two things, that can be a tiebreaker for sure.
And it also comes down to human beings making the decision on who they want to vote for. And if you're a human being and you don't watch every defensive shuffle or every defensive stop of every player, and it comes down to a popularity contest of some sort, and you think about Draymond Green, maybe you as a human voter, you don't care for Draymond Green, and that may factor into it. I look forward to hearing from Anthony Slater when he joins the Morning Roast for his next appearance, because I know that he was a voter for Defensive Player of the Year, and I'm sure he'll be transparent about who he voted for and exactly why he made the decision that he made.
Okay, so there are, am I accurate here? There's 100 voters. Is that right? I think it's exactly 100. I'm doing a quick tally. 35 and 15 is 50, 25, 75, plus 20. Yes, there's 100 voters.
You've seen the vote breakdown?
I got the vote now right here in front of me.
Already?
I've got the vote in front of me. How many of the 100 voters would you guess voted Draymond Green first place?
Of the 100?
100 voters.
I would say 17.
Really good guess.
Oh.
I didn't give him a plus minus.
Just that give me the buzzer. It's become my happy place.
No, give him a ding. Give him a ding.
Just buzz that man.
Except for he did overbid, so give him a buzzer.
I give it
Price
to
is right. Yeah. There you go. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
15. 15 first place votes for Draymond Green. 25 first place votes for Dyson Daniels. 35 first place votes go to Evan Mobley.
35, 25,
15.
15.
Yeah. So
wow, 70, that's 75 of the 100.
75 of the 100 votes went to those three players. Lou Dort got 11. Amen Thompson got 9. He was 5th. Zubats with the Clippers got 4. And then Giannis got a vote from some wackadoodle who lives in Milwaukee, I'm sure. But anyway, total points when you add up the second place and the third place votes. Evan Mobley, 285. Dyson Daniels, 197. Draymond Green, 154. So he did not win and, quite frankly, was really not that close to winning. Didn't even get second. So you can react to that. But we'll get back to last night's game, and coming up next, you got to hear something that Stan Van Gundy said during the game last night that I think is very important with regard to Steph Curry and the rest of this series. We're brought to you by Fremont Bank, here for you, here for good, and we would love your phone calls. What is still with you today after sitting with this one for about 20 hours or so? 888-957-9570. We take your calls all afternoon long on Willard and Dibbs.
Post, bounce pass to Draymond. Curry cuts through, sees body. Post open, above the break, three, and the postman rings twice. Hits another triple, and the Warriors are down by 12.
Dub Nation, it's Quinton Post. You're listening to Willard and Dibbs on 95.7 The Game.
Keep splashing, Quinton. I liked watching that guy put it in from three last night. What do you have, four of them?
Yep.
He got four threes.
Four of nine.
Okay.
And you were right when you said that after he got the first one, he started to kind of slowly get in there.
Got moved it downhill a little bit because he missed, yeah. I think, his first two.
Or more.
More.
Yeah, well, I was looking at his the video log of it earlier, and I'll pull it up just real quick. It was miss, and then it was make, and then a miss.
Okay.
So there you have it.
There you have it. Yeah, you got on a roll. So good to see. 888-957-9570. If you need your NFL draft fix, guess what? 95.7, the damn game. Tonight, soon as we're done, Baton, Grandy, Evan Giddings, Sterling Bennett, they will have all of it. And by the way, it'll start to unfold before we're done, but not the Niner pick. Unless they trade up, get Shedeur Sanders at number 2.
Yeah. I'm just looking at NFL happening? Network. How far could Shedeur Sanders fall if not drafted in the top 10? If he's sitting there at 11, don't you do it, Niners.
No,
don't you do it.
A quarterback.
No, but the thought is that Shedeur may slide, slippity slide.
Might not even get picked at all tonight.
Yeah.
I don't know
either.
If you believe the stuff and I don't believe the stuff, like all of a sudden it's like, oh, here's the worst interview I've ever heard in my entire life. Yeah, that's from somebody who wants to pick him. At 16.
We get into lying season for sure.
For sure. So anyway, the draft is coming. We'll start passing along what happens as it unfolds after 5 o'clock. But Grandy, Evan, and Sterling will take you all the way up to 10 o'clock tonight. Okay? 6 to 10 tonight. What do the Niners do? Is it up? Is it down? Is it stick and pick? Guys will break it all down. 6 to 10 p.m. right here on 95.7 The Game. I look forward to that. I look forward to that. And then Greg Cosell is going to join us for an hour tomorrow once we know the pick and anything else the Niners might do. And then we've got rounds 2 and 3 tomorrow.
Yep.
And the Niners have more action in there too.
And then 4, 5, 6, and 7 on Saturday. So we'll get a little look back and a look ahead from Greg Cosell tomorrow.
Exactly. Exactly. Very much looking forward to that. Looking forward to getting back to your calls. The Warriors lose. And everybody's against them. 888-957-9570. I will say this. I tried to make this a thing on the crossover. I didn't get a chance to check with you to see if you kind of buy where I'm coming from or not. But here's what I see when it comes to officiating and the physicality of the series. To me, there's two different things. the officials have a very, very hard job in this series because there's a foul seemingly by every player on every play. And the physicality flat out is what it is. You have to deal with that. These are adults. This is professional sports. You can't be over here being like, stop touching me. You got to deal with it. And the Warriors are dishing it as much as they're taking it. There's no doubt. We have Draymond Green on the team here in the Bay Area. So there's no complaining about physicality and touching. But I find there to be one set-aside that is a little bit different than the general physicality of the series. And it comes from this. And did you hear Stan Van Gundy say this on TNT last night during the broadcast? He's watching the game, and there was, I think it was when Steph hit that three where Van Vliet had his arm around him, and Steph did that motion where he looked at the refs, and he's like, he's pulling my hip. Listen to Stan Van.
Boy, I really wish we could have guarded like this when I had to coach against Steph Curry. He just put his left arm around his hip on that play and took him down. He could have done this. It would have been a lot easier.
Okay. He's exactly right. And Brian Anderson at one point, the play-by-play man on TNT, Steph Curry put up a three and made it, and Anderson goes, three, and he's fouled. No, he wasn't. Yeah. There was no foul. And Anderson goes, my bad, I said it wrong. And Stan Van goes, no, you didn't. You said it exactly right. The refs just didn't call it. It's very clear to me that the Houston Rockets, it's not just a general physicality. There's a very specific thing that they've been told to do to Steph Curry, and it's arm bars. You watch Dylan Brooks do this. This is what you watch it, youth ref.
Yep.
This is what little kids do when they try to defend. They don't understand about moving their feet, and so you stick your arms out, and you stick them out in this motion where you're making a V in front of you. And because you're trying to stop the person who's in front of you from being able to go anywhere. Now, if you're more sophisticated at it, like Dylan Brooks is, you put your arms out in your arm bar, and then you keep pulling them back. You keep pulling them back, 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 and making it look like, no, see, I'm not touching him. I'm not touching him. They're grabbing him around the waist every single play. He is being tackled. He is being fouled every single time. And that is, to me, a very targeted, strategic plan of the Rockets. And it is not legal. And so from that standpoint, if I'm the refs, if I'm Adam Silver, if I'm watching these games and thinking about big level basketball and one of the faces of my league, I am saying, hey, this is something that we need to address. We're not allowing the Rockets to strategically put arms around his waist on every possession. That's all.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, that's great. And I'm not going to refute that notion. And I don't know if you have the sounder ready, but we can do a Dibs deep dive on what I've unearthed about like players to Steph and the free throws that they get that he doesn't get. So before we do the deep dive, I'll just say this. Steph played for 16 years,
yeah,
and this has been a problem for 16 years. So if it's a real problem, and I'll share some numbers with you that indicates it is an actual thing,
yeah,
what are you going to do about it, Warriors? Well, because what you've done, it doesn't work.
It's not their problem to deal with. I don't think that they can. I don't know what. You know what I mean?
Is their problem to deal with because...
It's not. It's a problem.
The league is clearly... They've shown you over 16 years that they are not going to address it.
I'd argue that this is another level. I guess that's what I'm saying. You're not wrong. This is the way Steph Curry gets defended, and we've had this conversation, and our listeners have tapped into it and all of that. This, to me, and maybe I'll be open to the idea that maybe it's just the emotion of the series and the playoffs, but to my eye, this has moved to a new area code in terms of beating up of Steph Curry literally at the midsection. It's not a general thing. It's not just like, let's trip him and let's hit him in the head. It's strategically placed arms at the waist, constant, illegal, and very rarely, if ever, called. And yesterday we were talking about it being off ball. It's not just off ball. It's on ball also.
Right.
They tackled him multiple times when he had the ball yesterday and no call. And Stan Van Gundy, who's coached in the league, literally just said it. He said, wow, I wish we could do this to him. We couldn't do this to him when I coached against him. That's from a coach, not a broadcaster on the Warriors flagship station.
Right.
This is from a man who coached in the league.
I get it. And I'm not disagreeing with what you're saying or what Stan is saying. I'm more puzzled by the idea of, you know, what can the Warriors then do about it? Because it's clear that this is happening. And, you know, you can send clips into the league office and we can have a last 2-minute report and we can sit here on the radio and talk about it ad nauseum. But it's been 16 years of Steph not getting calls in general. And so at some point, you've got to decide to take different action. And it reminds me of an old neighbor I used to have that had a dog that barked constantly, through the day. The dog is barking and the owner was negligent. And so at some point you go to the owner and say, hey, could you maybe, you know, take the dog out of the backyard, or can you do something with the dog, and you do this and the dog still does it and it's year after year. At some point, you've got to try a different approach to get this dog to not spend its entire day yapping and barking and basically ruining the quietude of your neighborhood.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I totally get it. I'm not disagreeing with you either. This is not a new issue. I just think it is now at a different level, and it is heightened because we're in the playoffs. And you don't have a whole lot of Steph Curry playoffs left. I'm not over here advocating that the league call some sort of meeting and do a special waiver for Steph, but we actually see stuff like this all the time. This isn't something new. You'll see sports leagues every year, or even as you enter certain portions of the year. And they'll say things like, hey, we're cracking down on this.
Yeah, points of emphasis.
We're going to emphasize this over here. Baseball did it recently, a number of years ago now. But if you've watched baseball for a while, you know what used to be called the neighborhood play at second base. There was a double play, and you'd throw the ball over second. Whoever's catching the ball just need to be in the neighborhood of second base.
Yep.
Well, in the age of replay, they're like, we can't do that anymore. We better actually enforce your foot needs to be on the base when you catch the ball. And if it's not, dude's going to be safe. They emphasized it, and you watched athletes go out there and make changes. It's time. I'm sorry. Because this, not because we've suddenly just arrived at a moment where I want it or you want it. We've arrived at a moment where it's now gotten pushed up the staircase even further. This is too much. He's getting tackled.
Yeah, but they don't care. Like,
well, they
you
need
think
to.
It's been pushed up the staircase,
I do.
But it really hasn't. And you look at the history of Steph Curry in the association, and he's never gotten to the foul line commensurate with other players who play the way he does. And so my deep dive was looking at players who shoot threes at the rate that Steph does. And I just drew a couple of examples. In Steph's career, 52% of his shots are three-pointers. And so that's a lot. And at that, he shoots 4 free throws a game on the average. Another player who's very similar is James Harden. James Harden shoots 47 of his shots are three-pointers. So a little bit more driving to the basket. He shoots almost twice as many free throws a game. He shoots 8.2 free throws a game. So you got to ask yourself why, and they've almost taken the exact number of shots, by the way, in their career, over 18,000 apiece. And so James Harden shoots almost exactly the same way that Steph does, yet he shoots 4 more free throws a game. You got to ask yourself why. Is it because he is more of a complainer, more of a flopper? Is he better at embellishing and drawing contact?
I think that
yes, and yes.
The last one for me. He's way better at embellishing.
Well, I think it's all of it. And he's also better at inviting content.
Yeah, he seeks it.
And he actually made the league change the rule about the rip through. Because James would, you know, you get your arm near him and he would rip through and he'd like make it seem like he was shooting a shot. And now that's no longer a shooting foul because of James.
I have an idea.
Go ahead.
You want to know something I think he could do?
Yep.
First, you're listening to 95.7 The Game. KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco and Odyssey Sports Station, always live on the free Odyssey app, and now coming to you live from the Laughing Monk Studios.